99.5 FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2 a.m. following the work of the Midnight Ravers. It is now time for Back of the Book.
I almost fell asleep on that.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
Assume it's 5 a.m. and you're listening to all.
Is there anyone on the air? Is there anyone on the air? Is there anyone?
I hope this week we are Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about a few topics here this morning, and you can find out a little bit more about what we're talking about by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left side of your screen. At the top, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that, and you will be brought to the web page for this morning's radio program. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. The top story throughout all of the multiverses this week is: we have dropped down to 119 followers on Twitter. We actually lost one. A program note. Last week, our program that we'd prepared did not air. Somehow that program got switched with the previous week's program. We're sorry that happened. We're really sorry that happened. We're declaring this our 125th pandemic program because what we'd prepared last week was a fully prepared program that, while it will never air intact, is going to contribute some parts to this program. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, March 8th, 2023 at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. We had an LSB meeting on Wednesday, February 8th. What a mess. Some people want to make sure that the firing squad forms a perfect circle before they open fire. In addition, the other day, a member of the local station board sent in his resignation. So the membership of the LSB will now change a little bit. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 673,826,506 on Friday, and global deaths reached 6,861,850. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 103,100,558, and the death toll in America reached 1,117,180. So, 2,831 people have died of COVID-19 in America in the last week, which is about 400 fewer deaths over the past week than we'd had for the previous week. And that previous week had seen about 450 fewer deaths than we'd had on average for the previous couple of weeks. The pandemic is not over. Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on. We've both gotten our bivalent vaccinations. We are not among those who are saying that getting a COVID-19 infection is like getting a cold. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course. This was all mostly preventable. The United States government is still saying that the pandemic emergency will be declared over on May 11th. Pickles of the North has some information about that.
Yes, and this is on John Hopkins' website that's all about COVID and includes the dashboard that billions of people have used during the pandemic to get information. People, governments, very important. As of February 10, 2023, the article says that the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center will cease its data collection and reporting efforts on March 10, 2023. And the reasons they cite for doing this is that there's been a decline in public reporting of pandemic data from U.S. states, and there's been an expansion of the federal government's data capacities. And that actually is true because the CDC has a lot of information now on its website. It has its own dashboards, and individual states have been keeping tabs on wastewater, what the level of the coronavirus is in wastewater, as well as other viruses and bacteria. And you can go there on the New York State's website and see what's going on. And what seems to be going on there, along with the CDC information, for New York anyway, numbers are going down. They are definitely going down. We've gone from high alert to low now. So this was a very, very important resource. It was created at a time when, back in 2020, when the administration then, the office of the president on down, did not really have an interest in finding out what was really going on or keeping the public informed. So this was very important. I believe it was originally created by a doctoral student and his professor. And I'm not going to name their names because there's a little issue on who actually did the original work, but I think it might have been the student. That's often true in academia. Anyway, this was very important. Many people are still getting COVID, however. Wastewater is really good at determining if things are going sideways fast. So let's hope that these statistics will be kept up and we'll be kept informed on what's going on. And that was a wonderful resource. It's all being archived, of course, because this is very important information. So March 10th will be the end of the Johns Hopkins dashboard.
And, of course, it was the Trump administration that was busy in 2020 trying to suppress the information about the pandemic. The Russian invasion of Ukraine continues, and they continue to bomb people's apartments and blow up residential buildings and blow up all the infrastructure so that people will be freezing during the winter. And in Ukraine, it can get really cold. And so they're continuing that attack on people. And also, Russian operatives are flooding Twitter with attacks on Ukraine. Gee, what a surprise. Leon Scum is allowing that. It's a pretty obvious attack by Russia itself on Twitter. It's aided by both right-wing and left-wing jerks. I mean, they all agree, oh, yeah, this is right. Yeah, oh, and for their various different directions, they're all attacking America for helping Ukraine. And all those other countries must be bad too, I suppose. But oh, it's wonderful that Russia has decided to conquer another country. And I'll remind everybody that when Ukraine, after the breakup of the Soviet Union, agreed to give up its nuclear weapons and let Russia take them away, Russia guaranteed the sovereignty of Ukraine. And yeah, well, you know, Vladimir Putin is a lying sack of excrement. And so that's what's going on there. Anyway, it looks like Putin is getting ready for a big push pretty soon. Is he going to wait for spring, or is he going to, you know, is, I don't know what the weather's like over there, but if it's doing the same thing it's doing here, where we've just had the warmest January ever on record, and February is the same, oh boy, is he going to start rolling the extra tanks in even sooner and getting those Iranian drones to blow up all the stuff in Ukraine even more? Oh boy, what a terrible thing that Putin is doing. There are reports this week that Russia has sort of started its new offensive. I still don't know how the weather is over there, but the Russian forces are at least meeting serious resistance, if not seeing a serious casualty rate. At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. She is radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin. The George Santos scandal continues rolling along. He's being probed by the FBI for various different things, from starting a company that claimed to help animals and they didn't do it, to ripping off the veteran whose dog needed surgery, and he said, yes, we'll do a GoFundMe. And then the money was taken out by him, but the veteran and his dog never got any of it. And, of course, there's still that very interesting idea of he hardly had a pot to urinate in, and then 1 year later he's putting over $700,000 of his own money into his political campaign. Where did that money come from? How did that happen? You know, he could, instead of running for Congress, he could have set up some kind of a Ponzi scheme to say, look, I only had $55,000 to my name, and a year later I was able to squander $700,000 or more. And you can too if you go to the George Santos School of Flummoxery. Oh, wait a minute. He's already accused of running a Ponzi scheme. Ah, well, you know. Anyway, so he's done all of that, and I wonder if he'll complete his term before he goes to jail, or will his trial not even start before he's out of Congress. And from what one of his former roommates said, he's really just in Congress to get a lifelong pension and free medical care for the rest of his life. So, Jesus H. Christ, we can thank the Republicans for this. We can also thank the people on Long Island who said, oh, we don't want the Democrats. We'll vote for the Republican, even though they had no idea what the hell this guy was doing and the fact that he was just telling them lie after lie after lie. But there we go, politics in America these days. And now the feds are investigating the possibility that George Santos made himself a straw donor for all of that money. Yeah, there's a decent chance that he might not complete his 2-year term before he gets convicted of something. On our last program, we talked about a bill called HB 2007 in the West Virginia House that would ban gender-affirming care for youth in the state. Well, the bill passed by a vote of 84 to 10. All of the Republicans in the West Virginia House voted for it, and one Democrat voted for it as well. These bills will now go on to the West Virginia Senate, where I don't know, with an 84-10 thing there and probably heavily gerrymandered Republican districts in West Virginia, I suspect it's going to pass there. And, oh, man, this is very bad stuff. And it was noted last time we talked about the people going there and protesting this and saying, this is going to kill kids. And if the legislators really are concerned about kids' lives, as they claim, then they shouldn't be doing things that are going to harm them and maybe kill some of them. But this is what's going on, and this is part of the hate campaign from the Republican Party throughout America. So Pickles and I watched the State of the Union address. We watched the whole thing. I guess this labels us as really old people, because we actually watched the entire State of the Union address and were interested in it and watched the whole damn thing. I guess probably a lot of younger people didn't pay any attention to it at all, but I guess we're just old and we watch these things. And the Republican behavior during the State of the Union address was really something, and not a good something. And Speaker McCarthy was pissed off that some of them put themselves in a position where Biden could turn things around and get them to stand up and say that they were not going to attack Social Security and Medicare. What a bunch of liars. I guess this kind of behavior is the new normal in the United States Congress. I remember when one Republican shouted out, "Liar!" at President Obama during one of his State of the Union addresses. Now you have an entire clique of Republicans doing that and worse. Yeah, things are degraded in Washington these days. They're pretty much degraded in all of politics in America. The country is really devolving, and it really started with various politicians forming these right-wing things like the so-called Tea Party, and it was ridiculous then, and it's still ridiculous now. We have the Proud Boy fools going out and attacking Drag Hour. A Drag Story Hour at the Queens Public Library, and attacking other people. And I'm glad to say that some of the Proud Boys have been found guilty of January 6th insurrection activities, and so they're going to prison, and one hopes they stay there for a long, long time. And yeah, so we have this strange metamorphosis going on in America. How are historians going to look at this period? I mean, it might be historians looking at America as a past tense nation state. The place could fall apart. It's not impossible for America to cease to exist, although it has an awful lot of momentum. I mean, we got the largest economy in the world, and how is that going to devolve? Who knows? It's terrible stuff, and gee whiz. One really laments what's going on in America these days, and one hopes that the country can stand it, because these foolish Republicans and other right-wing jackasses are actually threatening the existence of the United States of America, and certainly they want to destroy democracy. This next part about the Chinese Communist Party balloon was from last week's never-aired program. We'll have a little update to it at the end. Of course, we've all heard about the party balloon. Oh, it's the party balloon. Yeah, that's the Chinese Communist Party balloon that was flying around over the United States last week. The party balloon finally got shot down this week. The U.S. military said they'd waited until it was over water so that it wouldn't kill or hurt anyone when it came down. Republicans, of course, attacked President Biden over not shooting it down right away. The military said they didn't want to shoot it down right away because it would hurt people if it came down on them. I mean, it was big. They described it as being the size of three buses. So that's a big balloon with this large amount of spy equipment hanging off it. And I suppose that the spy equipment heading in ahead probably going to hurt you a whole lot. I mean, I don't know. A balloon that big that's able to be up at like 60,000 feet, it's got a lot of lift. And so it can carry quite a weight of material. And I don't know what the spy equipment weighed, but geez, I wonder if it could be something as much as like half a ton or even a ton of metal and plastic, I suppose. So, yeah, it's certainly something to consider, not wanting it to come down. On the other hand, if they'd shot it down over land, and I don't know, you know, Montana, there's a lot of wide open spaces in Montana. I think it might have been a good idea to say, where is it going? Okay, let's shoot at it when it goes over this part and watch it fall down, and there won't be anybody there. Maybe they were concerned that the Chinese Communist Party would decide to steer the balloon over something where, if they shot it down, it would fall down in a populated area. It's a possibility. But gee whiz, they're having to scrape the stuff off the bottom of the ocean off the coast of South Carolina, but it would have been easier if we were all on land. They could more easily pick it up, I think. Anyway, U.S. Navy divers are scavenging up the pieces from the ocean floor, and it turns out that there are a bunch of these things all over the world. The government of the so-called People's Republic of China protested America's shooting down of their spy party balloon. Really, what gall? Some years ago, they crashed one of their fighter jets into an American spy plane that was over international waters, and that brought it down in China. And they imprisoned the American crew for weeks and took the plane apart. And they have also claimed half the Western Pacific Ocean as their own. And now the Chinese Communist Party is objecting because America shot down a spy balloon that showed up over Montana, for Christ's sakes. This is not international waters. This is the state of Montana. It is smack pretty much in the middle of North America. No doubt about it. It isn't something that drifted off course. It's something they sent to spy. Ah, what gall, though. Yeah, we get to spy on Montana, where we've got some nuclear missile silos and things. But, oh, you can't come over here into this part of the Pacific Ocean that's been in international waters for hundreds of years. You can't do that. Oh, man, they really just want it all ways, don't they? And what I think is the United States should help everyone else in the world to shoot down these Chinese Communist Party balloons, because they're showing up all over the place, all over the world. What I'm hearing is that the Chinese military was looking to save money. So instead of sending those expensive satellites up, which the satellites cost money, they cost money to maintain. And it also costs money to shoot them up into the proper kind of an orbit. And they said, hey, we could just use balloons. So, yeah, between the way corporations work and guys weasel their way into being executive vice presidents by making stupid proposals, and the way various left-wing and communist organizations work, which is amazingly similar, I can see where they would say, hey, let's send up some balloons, comrade. And somebody would say, yes, Comrade Superior, that is an excellent idea. And then they would just send these balloons up, thinking, oh, they'll never notice this balloon that's this big white thing that's city buses in diameter floating over Montana. Who could notice that at all? Of course, thousands of people were seeing it because on a clear day, it really stands out against the sky. The whole world is becoming a very strange thing. And again, I'm sure this will make it into the history books, and this will be a part of it. Maybe at some point in the future, they'll discover that space aliens came by several years ago, and instead of dropping bombs or using super-duper rays to blow everything up or dropping a virus into the atmosphere, maybe years from now, in another science fiction story, we hope it's science fiction, we'll discover that sometime in like maybe the 90s, the space aliens did come by, and what they did was they dropped stupid powder into the atmosphere, and human beings got stupider and stupider. They're probably still dumping tons of stupid powder into the atmosphere right now, which would explain a great many things that are going on in the world. And it looks like those additional three objects that were shot down this past week were probably not spy balloons. A group called Northern Illinois Bottle Cap Balloon Brigade says that one of their balloons is missing. Uh-oh. They're a hobby group that floats what are called pico balloons high in the atmosphere. They say that their balloon's last transmission came from about 39,000 feet above the Alaskan coast on February 10th, and the balloon was headed toward the Yukon Territory. The next day, an American F-22 fighter downed an object floating over that area at 40,000 feet. Aviation Week magazine says that these pico balloons have a description that's an awful lot like that of the objects that have been shot down over the past few days. The magazine says that a pico balloon can cost as little as $12. Aviation Week also reports that the AIM-9X missiles being used to shoot down all of these balloons are 10 feet long and cost more than $450,000 each. And they had to use two of them to get one of the balloons. So, not counting the valid shoot-down of the actually foreign power spy balloon, the United States has spent something like $1.8 million to shoot down the toy balloons. I was wondering how cost-effective this all was. And that doesn't count the cost of the jet fuel for all of the high-performance fighter jets that are being used. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. This next part was put together for last week's radio program. And yes, we know that Valentine's Day is now in the past. We're going to revive an old favorite on this program. In the past, we have done readings from a quirky little book that I discovered in the apartment at one point. I think my male ex picked it up when we were doing our tremendous trolling of almost every used bookstore in New York, Boston, and Washington, D.C., and it's this tiny little book. It's a few inches by a few inches, and it's called The Mistakes We Make. It's compiled and edited by Nathan Haskell Dole, and it bills itself as a practical manual of corrections in history, language, and fact for readers and writers. And it was published in 1898. And that's a part of the charm of it. This is something that is kind of frozen in time from 125 years ago. It wasn't quite that old when we first started reading from it. What happened was we had read from it here and there, and I would put portions of it up on the website for whatever program we'd read it in. And then we lost it. However, our saddle pal, Maxwell J. Schmied, and our friend Seth both went up, I think, to Flea Bay and found copies of the book and sent it to us. So we have it here, and I don't know which of their copies this is, but it's one of those copies that the two of them sent us. So we thank Maxwell J. Schmied, who's taking time off at this time, and he deserves it, and Seth, who sometimes sends us stuff. By the way, thank you, Seth, for that book of...
Oh, lovely pictures of the space program. It's very nice.
Yes, thank you for that. Anyway, getting back to this little book, what we do is we read a piece of it, and sometimes it's interesting because it shows what people were thinking 125 years ago, and sometimes they've still got a point. And right now, given the season, we're going to read a little bit about Valentine's Day. In this book, it says, Valentine's Day is not a saint's day. You know, we hear Saint Valentine mentioned a lot. It says here, Valentine's Day is not a saint's day. Valentine comes from galantine, a lover. But as birds pair about the time of Bishop Valentine's martyrdom, February 14th, that day was used as a popular time for love missives and called Valentine. Well, that's an interesting idea. I've looked this up a little bit, and, oh, well, it's rather more complicated. There are, first of all, a lot of Catholic martyrs named Valentine. There's just a whole pile of them, because these guys would say, we want to be Catholic, and the Romans would say, you dirty heretics, and they'd kill them, and, you know, sometimes they'd throw them in the Colosseum to be eaten by lions while everybody watched. Jeez, that says a lot about Roman culture, doesn't it? On the other hand, they were sucking down a lot of lead. This is not in the book, but we must remember that it wasn't just a case of the Romans having lead pipes that contaminated their water. That will contaminate your water, put some lead in you, mess up your brain, but it's not that much. The big killer was there is a lead compound that tastes sweet to people. And in the Roman Empire, cane sugar hadn't been discovered yet. It was going to have to wait until the voyages of discovery when they found in other parts of the world cane sugar growing. So they didn't have sugar the way we know it. They had sugar beets. But one of the things that they did in ancient Rome was they discovered that there was a lead compound that tasted sweet, so they would make like a cake and sprinkle this lead compound over it. Think of how much sugar goes into a cake. Now imagine that being lead. Oh, so maybe the fact that the Romans were in many ways extremely horrible people can be chalked up to the fact that certainly for the upper classes who could afford sweeteners, they were all lead poisoned and their brains were messed up, and maybe that's what made them so horrible. Or maybe they were just horrible in the first place. We don't know. We'll never know. Anyway, I looked some of this up, and there were a lot of martyrs, Christian martyrs, named Valentine. The Catholic Church venerates these guys a lot. Probably not all of them, because there were a whole lot of these guys. Some of them are saints. Some of them, I don't think, became saints. But there were a bunch of Valentines who were martyrs. And the skull of one Saint Valentine is on display in a basilica in Rome, and it has a crown of flowers on it. Well, it's not as bad as feeding people to lions, but I wonder if some of the church higher-ups are using that lead compound to sweeten things. I wonder. I don't know. No way to tell. As we are all made extremely abundantly aware, this is a time of love and stuff like that associated with Valentine's Day and also chocolate and flowers. This is something that in our culture has shown up as Valentine's Day. You say you love people, or if you like them, you might also just send them a Valentine's card, send them maybe some candy and flowers, and this is considered a big deal, acceptable thing to do. For heterosexual relationships, it's usually the male gives the female flowers and candy. That's the way it sort of works. With Pickles and me, she gives me some candy sometimes. When I eat the candy. I don't get the flowers. She gets the flowers. She does with the, I don't do anything with the flowers. Flowers, eh. Flowers, to me, is like cockroaches. To quote a character on Perry Mason, Valentine's Day, February 14th, only really got associated with love and romance in the 14th and 15th centuries. Those were the times in Europe when what was called courtly love started to get into whatever culture was happening back then. And so courtly love started, and they have these rather strange sounding to us these days poems of that are really treacly. And that's what they were doing back then. And this is where we really get the association of love and romance with Valentine's Day. There was a feast in Rome called Lupercalia, and it was celebrated on February 13th and 14th. It was a pagan thing that they did. They had their religion, and they were celebrating things. It had sort of, maybe, kind of to do with people getting together, and a pope abolished it after the Catholic Church rose to power in Rome. He abolished it in the 5th century. So it's been abolished for a long time.
Yes, that was the festival where they'd have a lottery, and the young males would go and pick out the names of the, it sounds like, teenage girls, and then you get to have fun for a year and do it all over again when the festival came around.
And, in fact, besides banning it in the 5th century, besides banning it, there are theologians who say there is no connection whatsoever between Lupercalia and Valentine's Day. And also, some of them say, and that never happened. They never did go and choose up like that. Maybe there was something else somewhere else. That didn't happen. Lupercalia wasn't that. So, you know, these are theologians, Catholic theologians, some of whom are required to tie it in a knot for the entire time that they're being priestly. The theologian field isn't exactly lucrative. You don't see a lot of Times advertisements in the job openings area. Wanted, theologian, high pay. You get a corner office somewhere, and we'll pay you lots of money to be a theologian. No, it's various people who are usually like religious fanatics who go and say, here I am, I'm a priest. What am I going to do? Oh, well, maybe I should do something that doesn't have me interfacing with altar boys all the time. And so, yes, I can go off into some place where nobody else goes and read all sorts of silly theological books and become a theologian by writing down what I think about them and all of that good stuff. So theologians, who pays attention to them? And that's where they are. Anyway, so some theologians are denying that Lupercalia did have this lottery, and they also deny any connection between Lupercalia and Valentine's Day. I will note, Valentine's Day is banned in Indonesia, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia. Yeah, they are definitely saying you can't do that. Even though Abu Qasim ibn Abdullah, also known in those countries as Muhammad, did have a number of wives, one of whom was really, really young. Maybe he liked Valentine's Day, who knows? However, giving flowers, cards, or gifts suggestive of Valentine's Day is banned in Iran. Apparently, however, in Iran, it is widely accepted, especially among the young people. So, yeah, there is that. These places are saying it's against their religion to have Valentine's Day. Well, you know, have fun if you can, and that's the important thing, having fun on Valentine's Day. If you want to do it, do it. Otherwise, you can eat candy if you can. Some of us have a little, you know, back and forth with candy. Send cards back and forth and sniff the flowers if you want. Yeah, we're going into Valentine's Day. And another part of this particular little book, the topic on this part is A Star That Is Not a Star. And it starts out with a quotation. "Till clomb above the eastern bar, the horned moon with one bright star within the nether tip." And clomb is climbed. And that's from The Rime of the Ancient Mariner by Coleridge. And it says here, "The star mentioned in this quotation from the third part of Coleridge's Ancient Mariner is not a star, but a lofty lunar peak from which the light of the sun is reflected, and which may be seen sometimes on clear evenings when the moon is in the first quarter in the shadowed disk at some distance from the bright crescent." Of course, we all know there's no star inside the moon. We know that, even though certain organized superstitions we've already mentioned have that as a symbol. And in looking some of this stuff up, I also found that Abu Qasim ibn Abdullah at one point was supposedly splitting the moon, split it in half, and then put it back together again. So, yeah, okay. Organized superstitions get really weird. So he's saying that it's a very tall mountain on the moon. And I'm going, So I've looked some of this up, and, well, could it be maybe a part of Peary Crater that's named after Admiral Peary, who claimed to have been the first person on North Pole and who very well may not have been? Or is it just total nonsense? Coleridge's poem was published in 1798, and I've seen things like this in old books about astronomy, and they go on about being able to see something like that. They also go on about being able to see the high mountains on Venus. Well, we know that ain't happening, kiddies, not with that atmosphere, and before telescopes at all. And, of course, you have later telescopes, but they're not tremendous. I mean, the Hubble isn't hundreds of years old. In fact, peaks of eternal light on the moon, that idea of peaks that were always lit up, was first postulated in 1837. So Coleridge's poem is published in 1798, and these two guys say, gee, there might be parts of the moon that are eternally lit up, and they do that in 1837. So who knows if this is at all possible, but probably it's not a naked eye event if it really is there. Most probably optical illusion, because people look up and they think they see things. One of the things you can see is, for instance, on a thin crescent moon, toward the end, you see the new moon in the old moon's arms. That's what it's called, because you've got a thin crescent towards the end of the lunar cycle, but you can just barely see a dark rest of the moon, and that's because the light bounces off the Earth. Because a part of the moon is lit up directly by the sun, but the Earth is right there. So some of that light from the sun reflects from the Earth, goes up to the dark part of the moon, and you can sort of see it. Sometimes it's hard to see, sometimes it's easy to see, but this is something that happens every single month. So it's possible people just had optical illusions of seeing that kind of thing, and they just never really got it there. So is it part of Admiral Peary Crater? Probably not, because that's at the southern part of the moon, and I don't think that's a naked eye observation. And it's possible that this whole idea is just total, utter nonsense, And I tend to lean toward it being nonsense entirely. So Mr. Nathan Haskell Dole there, while correcting mistakes, has most probably made his own mistake this time. And it'd be good if you could write to us, let us know if you think this kind of digressionary stuff is something you want to hear more of. Write to me, rpm at glib.com, rpm@glib.com. And write to us, let us know if you think this is something you would like to hear more of, these little trivia things from 1898, or if it's really the worst thing you've ever heard in the multiverse.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
And there's been a technological revelation about a bit of history from long ago. Some amateur cryptographers have deciphered the letters of Mary, Queen of Scots. The letters, which had been thought to be lost, were written between 1578 and 1584. Mary was Catholic and was, of course, in conflict with her sister, Queen Elizabeth I, for years. And Queen Elizabeth I was a Protestant. So they were having these wars back and forth, and this was a part of it. And Mary, Queen of Scots, basically was writing to people in the French embassy and to her supporters, and she wrote it in a code so that Queen Elizabeth I's spies couldn't figure out what she was writing. Of course, as it turns out, Queen Elizabeth also had spies in France, and so when the French deciphered them, they got what's called the plain text. And, you know, they didn't have to worry about deciphering what's called the ciphertext. They said, we don't need to do all that. We just get on our 16th century telephone and say, hey, spy guy in France, you got the plain text? Tell us what it says. And he would tell them what they said. So they deciphered it. They were able to use modern methods of decryption and code breaking. And there were a whole bunch of letters. I think there were 55 letters. They were thought to be lost, but they found them in a museum. And they were written in French. And they were misfiled. They were thought to be Italian, probably because it's encrypted and, you know, it doesn't look like ordinary French. It's French with some weird stuff in it. Anyway, Elizabeth had Mary executed in 1587. So a piece of history has been uncovered, and we can know more now about this interesting conflict than we used to know before. This is listener-sponsored, non-commercial radio, WBAI New York, and we are really listener-sponsored. We have to rely on you, the listeners, to send us money. We've been putting stuff on that the mainstream media has not wanted to put on for more than 60 years. Oh, boy. And WBAI is 63 years old as a Pacifica station. So we've been doing this for quite a while. We still need money. We still need to beg you for money. And that was the idea of Lou Hill, was instead of having sponsors to whom you are beholden, be beholden to the people who listen. And if you do programs that they think are good and that they appreciate, they will support you. And so we're hoping that we're doing our part to uphold Lou Hill's idea, and we're hoping we can get you to do your part in upholding Lou Hill's idea of public radio in America. What we're asking you to do is dial 1-212-209-2950, and when you get a call center there, that's what's going to pick up, tell them you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. A BAI buddy is the name we have for WBAI's sustaining membership program. And what that means is when you call up 1-212-209-2950, they'll pick up the phone. You'll tell them you want to become a BAI buddy. You will then give them your name and stuff, and you will give them your credit card or debit card number and tell them how much you want to donate on a monthly basis. You can become a BAI buddy for $5 a month, $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month, more if you want to, and you also tell them what day of the month you want your credit card or debit card charged. And that will help us a great deal. Again, 1-212-209-2950. You know, we bring you all sorts of stuff, and most of you have heard this pitch before, but we got to do it because we must raise money. I was talking before about money problems throughout Pacifica. BAI is a part of that. If WBAI could make it so that we raise enough money to break even, just to break even, we would not be under attack by certain other people in Pacifica who would like to sell BAI. WBAI having the license sold would give tens of millions of dollars to other people in Pacifica. And unlike losing a building, there wouldn't be any need for a BAI anymore, because without the signal, what's BAI? We rent space anyway. So it would really help some other people to get tens of millions of dollars, and then they could go on producing programming that not many people listen to. Could do that for years and years. And since a lot of them are my age or around my age, that money would last them the rest of their lives, and they never have to watch what would happen when the money ran out. We don't want to have BAI sold, and we are also hoping that we do appeal to a goodly number of people out there. We are hoping we appeal to you, and that you will dial 1-212-209-2950 and donate. Become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And I'm told you get a tote bag, a WBAI tote bag. Ooh, boy, everybody wants one of those, don't they? 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number. And again, as I've noted before, when you donate, you are telling management that there are listeners to this radio program and that those listeners want to keep the station going. Again, a guy brought up again very recently that, hey, let's just sell off the midnight to 6 a.m. time slots on BAI. We could sell that to who knows what for some amount of money, and that would be it. Everything would be hunky-dory for everybody. Well, not everybody. Those of you who are listening to us right now would end up having to, I don't know what you'd end up listening to, stock market reports or some other damn thing. Could even, I don't know, depending on people, we could even end up with religious programming on here. Oh, my godlessness, who wants that? And so we could end up with some programming in the overnights, and it would be seven overnights a week, that is, if not antithetical, at least not congruent with the way BAI and Pacifica have been doing things for decades. That could be very bad news. 1-212-209-2950. 1-212-209-2950. Please call the call center at that number now. Give them a call and say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And really insist that they write down that it's Back of the Book, because we need to get credit for this stuff. 1-212-209-2950. An anonymous donor has included us in a largest donation that is going to three different radio programs, and we got some of that, and we thank the anonymous donor. And we also, oh, by the way, you can tell them you want to be thanked on the air if you donate. And, you know, folks, let's see, George and Bonnie and Michael and Dorothy and Tony, along with Anonymous, have donated. And we are hoping that you will join them and help keep WBAI on the air and help keep Back of the Book on WBAI. Again, 1-212-209-2950. And, there's a cow on the tracks. There's a cow on the tracks. Oh, watch out, cow. Whoops. All right. Well, we hope that you will help the WBAI Pitching Express to raise money for BAI and keep it all alive. So thank you if you donated. That's been it for Back of the Book. Coming up next is
Ecologic with Ken Gale, Donna Stein, and Sally Gellert.
We are supposed to be back here next week. We hope we are. Enjoy the coming end of midwinter. And above all, remember what that glad if we're on the air this time Dormouse said.
The next meeting of the WBAI Community Advisory Board, CAB, is on Sunday, February 19th at 1 p.m., and you are invited to attend. The CAB is an advisory board which reviews programming and other station policies. It represents the diverse needs and interests of the communities WBAI serves. If you want to attend the meeting, you can join by teleconference at 619-309-1058. And the PIN number is 641-711. Everyone is invited to call in and join the meeting. Once again, the call-in number is 619-309-1058. And the PIN number is 641-711. The WBAI Community Advisory Board meeting, Sunday, February 19th at 1 p.m. Hope you'll be able to attend.
We're raising money today for the Tower Fund here at WBAI.
And without that tower, we can't stay on the air.
Please, just give what you can.
And those contributions can be small or they can be large, but those are the contributions that we need to make in order to beat back the other side. No one is going to do it for us.
Even a few dollars a month helps to keep us on the air.
Let's face it. Without Pacifica, what do you have? NPR is too milquetoast. PBS, too milquetoast. Without Pacifica, we're dead in the water.
And that pledge line is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950.
And we're only asking those who can give it, those who can afford it. We know that there's some people out there who cannot afford it, and that's one of the problems. Those of us who relatively have must stand up for those who have not.
I'm sick and tired hearing people complain about, well, you know, the right wing has Fox News and they have this and they have that. The oppressor always has more money than the oppressed. We have to make use of the resources that we have. We have people and we have people that can make contributions.
Here on WBAI 99.5 FM, we want to have the Tower Fund strong and healthy so we're not worried about it.
212-209-2950.
Or you can go online at WBAI.org and donate to the Tower Fund.
Hour Building Bridges special with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg from 6 to 9 p.m. Monday, February 20th over WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Malcolm X and the end of white world supremacy. More than 58 years after his death, Malcolm X remains a towering figure who still speaks truth to power and whose worldview and practice has enduring resonance. Listen to Elhaj Malik El Shabazz, Malcolm X, Tell It Like It Is. On Monday, February 20th, from 6 to 9 p.m., a Building Bridges special with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg here on on WBAI New York and also worldwide through WBAI.org.
You're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. My name is Bill Samuels, founder of NYPeople'sConvention.org. WBAI is New York's leader in progressive talk. Whether the issue is prison reform, education reform, the legalization of marijuana, or women's rights, the people's issues are covered on these airways. So stay tuned for the best in leading-edge progressive ideas and analysis.